Hello, and welcome to the Why I Help podcast. My name is Joni Siegel, and I'm the host for this podcast. And the whole purpose of this podcast is to focus on people who are doing good. Today, we're going to talk to Dr. Craig Escudé. He is a board-certified fellow of the American Academy of Family Physicians with over 20 years of clinical experience providing medical care for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and complex medical conditions. He graduated from Louisiana State University Medical School in New Orleans in 1992 and completed his residency in family medicine in 1995. At the University of Mississippi Medical Center in Jackson, Mississippi. He practiced family medicine for 4 years at a federally qualified health center in Mississippi and began working for Mississippi State Hospital in 1997. At the state hospital, he provided medical care for the several hundred people receiving mental health care and to more than 350 people on the hospital's campus who were supported in nursing homes. He began working at Hudspeth Regional Center, a state residential program for people with severe and profound intellectual and developmental disabilities, also known as IDD, in 1998 until his retirement from the state in June of 2018, serving as medical director for most of that time. While at Hudspeth, he founded DETECT, the Developmental Evaluation Training and Educational Consultative Team of Mississippi, whose purpose is to educate, train, and support community-based medical and dental providers who provide care for people with IDD. Let's talk to Dr. Craig Escudé. Dr. Craig Escudé, thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
Glad to be here.
So you are doing some very interesting things in the medical field, dealing with IDD or intellectual and developmental disabilities. But tell us, how did you arrive where you are today? How did you get started?
Well, I actually kind of fell into it. When I started medical school, I did not think I would be working in this field. I had really no understanding of it, which frankly is one of the big concerns that I'm sure we'll probably talk about later. But when I started medical school, I was interested in, you know, primary care and just taking care of people in general, and started practicing and heard about this state hospital nearby that needed some help. They needed a physician to help cover some extra hours. And I began working there, and it was actually a state mental hospital in Mississippi. And while working there, I also heard about this place across the street that, for lack of a better word, took care of people with disabilities. We use the term support now, but a while back we had different terminology. So they provided care and a home for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and they also needed a physician to help. So I started working there, and I was quite surprised by a number of things. One, I was surprised at how little understanding I actually had, how little training I had received in providing healthcare for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and also how rewarding it was for me. And it just became something that I wanted to do more of. So I transitioned my career away from regular family practice into providing healthcare for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities as the medical director of Hudspeth Regional Center.
Okay. Now, just to clarify, so you're not a psychologist.
I'm not. I'm a family physician.
A family physician. How does that work? Because my understanding, are intellectual and developmental disabilities, are those primarily mental? Are they physical?
So an intellectual disability is defined as a person who has difficulty with intellectual functioning. We often know about the term an IQ score. And right. So it's generally someone who has an IQ score of less than 70, but also coupled with adaptive changes, which means difficulty in, say, things like normal activities of daily living, being able to manage money, being able to cook for themselves or just facilitate normal things that most of us would do to, to have a life. They need support for those things. So it's an intellectual function, not necessarily a mental illness. It's just a difference in the ability of a person to understand complex concepts and things that will help them to live in normal life. Now, associated with those, oftentimes, especially as the level of disability increases, meaning it's more severe, there are also additional, there are medical conditions that usually co-occur. People with intellectual and developmental disabilities have a higher incidence of co-occurring medical conditions. They have a number of medical conditions that they're more susceptible to that we don't often think about, and they often present in many different ways. So they usually will have higher medical needs, especially if they're more on the severe and profound level of disability.
Okay. And does the medical condition, does it perhaps contribute or exacerbate the intellectual and developmental disability?
You can have both. Intellectual disabilities can make it harder, for instance, for people to be able to take care of themselves from a health standpoint and a medical standpoint. They may not have
Okay.
the understanding of what to do or how to do it or how to take meds or what meds they should be on, or even when to notify someone if they're hurting or not hurting. So it may be more challenging to meet the healthcare needs of a person with disability. And then some people with disabilities have medical conditions that can contribute to other issues, such as seizures. Seizure disorders can be associated, or more people with intellectual and developmental disabilities have seizure disorders. They're also more complex, and those in turn can further exacerbate intellectual functioning, or make it more difficult to function in daily life. So you can see kind of both sides of things.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for explaining that. Does Alzheimer's fall into something like this, or is no?
So not really. Alzheimer's is certainly a difficulty in cognitive functioning. We lose some abilities to function cognitively. But one of the things that defines an intellectual or developmental disability is that it occurs before the age of 18. And the definitions are slightly different. It's 18 for intellectual disabilities and 21 for developmental disabilities. But these are things that occur early on in life, usually as a result of some either a condition that happened at birth, an infection during pregnancy, something that happened very on or early on in childhood, say maybe meningitis that damaged the brain and caused some problems. And so they're usually lifelong conditions, and they're not expected to really improve or get better to any significant degree over time. Whereas Alzheimer's is kind of on the opposite end, where you have, people of all different levels of intellect, including people with disabilities. Some of them are at more or at an increased risk for Alzheimer's, such as people with Down syndrome, but usually have normal intellect, and then as you get older, you have a decline in intellectual functioning.
Right. Okay, understood. So you saw this as an area that definitely needed some attention. What did you then do? You were obviously treating them themselves, but you went beyond that.
Well, when I first started in the field, one of the first things I realized was how ill prepared I was as a physician to meet the healthcare needs of people with disabilities. And I hate to have to say that, but I have to, I just have to admit it. The healthcare education system in the country really does not provide the level of education and understanding that healthcare providers should have in order to meet the healthcare needs of people with IDD, intellectual and developmental disabilities. And that's not just physicians, that's nurses, that's dentists, that's physical therapists, occupational therapists, really a wide range of healthcare providers. Many years ago, many people, especially people with severe and profound levels of disabilities, were or lived in institutional type settings. So they were very much confined to these larger institutions. And what's happened over the years is that more and more people are moving out of these larger institutions into community-based settings. And you might have different viewpoints on that, but I will tell you that it is certainly better for anyone, if they're capable, to live in a more integrated setting, in a more community-type setting where they have friends and community involvement, than to live in an institution if you don't have to.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
And the fact that IDD or someone who suffers from that, it's different than a mental health issue. I would completely agree with you. It sounds to me like people with these types of disabilities have just been lumped in with people with, heavy duty, excuse my lack of scientific term, but heavy duty mental health issues, which they don't necessarily have.
That's exactly right. And we could probably talk for 4 hours on just what you said. But going back to just me realizing that, okay, I'm one physician. Most physicians have not received training, and more people are moving out of these larger facilities into community settings where they're becoming more reliant on community healthcare providers for their healthcare who don't have training.
Right.
So I really made it my personal mission to work to provide training and support for community-based healthcare providers and anyone who supports people with disabilities, but especially the medical community, to learn the basics, the fundamentals of how to provide good healthcare for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, how to communicate with them, how to understand their language, how it's different, and how to have some basic kind of diagnostic tools and recognition tools and screening tools, primarily so that people with disabilities don't suffer needlessly.
Right.
They don't suffer from not having been diagnosed with a condition that's easily treatable.
Right. I think that's huge. Steve mentioned we do a different podcast about addiction, and one of the biggest things that we try to do with that podcast is to educate people on the whole subject of addiction. And what you're saying is fascinating. It never would have, first of all, I didn't know there was such a thing as IDD. I didn't know it was different than mental health. And I would imagine that a lot of doctors just said, oh, well, you obviously have a mental health issue. Go see a psychiatrist or go to an institution or, start taking heavy drugs and good luck, which.
You're hitting on so many
Man.
points, that we try to, cover, that we try to educate healthcare providers, and it's not just healthcare providers. It's really anyone who works in this field, and really everyone should have a basic understanding of intellectual and developmental disabilities, what they are, and just how to help people live better lives.
Well, exactly, because we know that people we fear what we don't understand. And so I might look at someone with an intellectual or developmental disability and be a little put off because I don't quite understand what's going on there. And it's not dangerous. They're not bad people. They just, they have some disabilities that need to be understood and need to be understood. I mean, just for lack of a better word. And I think it's huge what you're doing in terms of educating people, doctors primarily.
One of the things that you mentioned is, how it's nothing to be scared of or afraid of. But those are
Right.
some of the misconceptions that people have. Those are some of the stereotypes that people have of people with an intellectual or developmental disability. And they're scared, or they don't want to touch them, or when you get into a medical level, that they don't have a quality of life that's really worth treating, that's really worth doing a lot for. That is one of the biggest stigmas that we have to address in this field.
I
As
have to
I
say that
began,
that's very sad. I'm sorry.
it is. And I'll point you to something if you want to read something very sad. not that anyone does, but very impactful. Let me change that. As I began to become more involved in educating clinicians, I began to hear more and more and more stories of very disturbing interactions that people had with physicians in terms of trying to access the healthcare system and to get good healthcare. I heard it from family members. I heard it from nurses who worked in the field that were trying to bring, say, one of their patients to a physician to get healthcare. And it was things like, hey, we don't need to treat this person. They don't really have a quality of life. Or, you know what? Let's just put this person on hospice because they just really don't have a lot to live for. And
That's awful. I'm
it is awful.
sorry.
It is awful. And I began to collect these stories. And I could reach down in my drawer right now. I have a pack of surveys that I keep here to remind me of why I do what I do. And I surveyed about 175 nurses in the field and asked them to give me little stories about good experiences they had with healthcare providers and bad experiences. And the bad experiences outweighed the good ones by two-thirds. And I decided I wasn't going to really analyze this. I turned this over to some independent researchers. So just recently published was an article that recounts many of these negative experiences that nurses had in trying to get healthcare from healthcare providers, namely physicians. And it is stories like some of the things that I mentioned about people simply refusing to treat a person because they didn't feel like they had a good quality of life, or not wanting to treat things like arthritis, because again, they didn't think they would live that long, or not wanting to do preventative health screenings because they didn't feel like they were going to live that long. And so these are the things that we're fighting. These are the things that we're trying to change. And it starts with education. It starts with educating healthcare providers. And I know I've kind of dogged physicians, and I'm one of them. But I want to say this. I don't think physicians don't want to do the right thing. I don't think they're trying not to. It's simply not being trained and not having the understanding. And a perfect example of that is I'm a family physician. If you asked me to perform a heart surgery, heart surgery, you would have a very poor outcome because I wouldn't know what I'm doing. But if I were trained, you'd probably have a much better likelihood of having a good outcome. So it's really the training that needs to take place, so that healthcare providers can in turn take care of the millions of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities in the country.
I think that's huge. I need you to tell me a good story. I need you to tell me one with a good outcome.
Oh, a good story. Let's see. So I'll tell you a good story about this was related to me. I had done a talk for a particular group of nurses and other healthcare providers, and they asked me to come back a year later. And one of the people that was in the talk, she ran up to me as soon as she saw me. She says, "Oh, Dr. Escudé, I've got to tell you this story." She said, "We had this person with a disability. He was not verbal. He didn't use words to communicate. And he started having lots more behaviors where he was hitting other people, where he was hitting himself. He was self-abusive. And one of the first things that people usually do is they go to the psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist sees these behaviors and says, oh, let's put him on a medication to calm them down. And so that they had already been through that. They had already done that. None of that worked. They started to look at having him committed to a mental hospital. And she said, I had just come back from your talk, and one of the things you mentioned was that sometimes people in pain have behaviors that act out, and one of those hidden causes of pain is dental pain. And so I suggested to the team, I said, let's go take him to the dentist. Let's let him have a thorough evaluation and tell him what's going on. And they did x-rays, and he had multiple abscesses in his teeth. They took care of that, And his behavior went back to normal, and he was his normal, pleasant self. And he completely avoided a hospitalization, unnecessary medications, all of that, simply because that person learned some of the different ways people with disabilities might present. And that person now is back to his usual self.
Oh my goodness. I mean, if I had multiple abscesses in my mouth, I would definitely probably be hitting you and maybe myself as well. Interesting. What you're doing is so valuable. I can't begin to tell you. I would imagine that you are probably saving the lives of way more people than you even know about, you know?
Well, I appreciate that, and that's very, very humbling. It's something that, again, I would say I fell into this field. Yeah, most of the people who come into this field come into it in one of two ways. They either have a loved one who has a developmental or intellectual disability, and they want to work in that field to support that field, or they kind of fall into it like I did. And when we fall into it, or when we're in it, you learn very quickly that you either like this field and you want to continue working in it, or it's not for you. And so I consider it very much a blessing to have fallen into this field, and it very much is what I want to do, need to do, and enjoy doing. And I'm very thankful that other people may be being helped by it. But it's very fulfilling to me just as much. So I'm not gonna lie about that.
I think that's awesome. Last question. So, if I had a family member that I suspected was suffering from not a mental illness, but one of these disabilities, where do I go? How do I find someone such as yourself?
So you would probably know early on, because these things do start early. You would know, and hopefully your clinician that you would be working with would know as well, that there's some sign of a disability, some delay in development. And it is a different world. You're right. You have to kind of know where to access resources. Every state has an Office of Developmental Disabilities. They're named something different in each state, but that would be one place that I would start, is to contact the state department. It's either going to be through the Department of Health or the Department of Mental Health, and again, it's different in every state, and ask what resources are available. There are many programs out there to support people in their homes. It doesn't mean you're going to an institution by any means. In fact, that's very discouraged nowadays, but there are many ways that people with disabilities can be helped and can be assisted to live a life integrated into society. And to find other resources, the internet does certainly open up a lot of resources and a lot of access now as well too. So just searching for supports and services for people with disabilities can be helpful.
Okay. Well, if all else fails, can they find you? Are you on the internet? Are you reachable?
Absolutely. I work with Intellectability. We are a company that provides tools and training to people who support people with disabilities, to states, to agencies, to residential providers. And you can find us at our website, which is replacingrisk.com. And we use that because we replace risk with health and wellness in people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. So you can find us there.
I love that. Dr. Escuday, thank you for taking the time to talk to us today. I think that what you're doing is innovative, and I think that people are going to be glad to hear what you're saying, and I know I am. So, thank you.
It's been my pleasure.
I was absolutely fascinated by the interview with Dr. Escuday. I want to tell you about a book he wrote called Clinical Pearls in IDD Healthcare, something that if you know of someone who is struggling with an intellectual or developmental disability, you could possibly read the book. His website for the company that he works with is called replacingrisk.com. com, and you can check that out. He's also going to send me a link to the paper that he mentioned was published. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate what he does. I think that this whole area is not understood, definitely not understood by me, and I think also not understood by the medical profession. So I think the fact that he is educating in that area is absolutely huge. You know, there are a lot of people out there who are doing really good things. It's the majority of the people. What you see in the mass media is the minority who's just trying to stir up trouble. So if you know someone who's doing really good things and helping people, let us know. We'll have them on the podcast. Y'all have a great rest of the week.